Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Andy and Dean. Pumping thick, creamy dollops of loveliness into your ear holes. Nice.
Number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 11. I'm one of your hosts, Andy, and joining me, as always, is the one, the only...
Dean Swain.
How are you doing, Dean Swain?
I'm good, thank you, Andy. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, mate, not too
good,
bad.
Good.
Now, it's been quite a while since me and you recorded last, I think. It's been over a month and a bit, I think.
It has, yes. It's been some strange times recently, certainly in my life. So, not a lot of game playing, unfortunately. Bit of game designing.
Yeah.
But, things going on at work, so change of direction there. So, yeah, plenty to tell you.
Right, so before you tell us what exactly you've been playing, what you've been up to, let's quickly tell everyone what the show plan is and what the show topic is. So this episode is going to be called the Top 10 Atari 2600 Games, because obviously we're going to be talking about the Atari 2600.
Yeah, top now, console.
Absolutely fantastic. So we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've been up to, what we've been playing. We've got some site news for you as always. And yeah, we've got the Top 10 Atari 2600 Games. And then after that, we're going to round things up. So, Dean, why don't you tell us a little bit about exactly what you've been up to? How's life been treating you?
Life has been treating me rather harsh. Basically, I already do shift work in my job, and I think it was probably about a fortnight ago, I got called into a meeting, and we were told that we were working nights only from now on. So, no one wants to do nights, but the insult was there will be no extra pay, so... Yeah, it sort of turns your life upside down. It's going to cost me probably about, I don't know, just over 1,200 quid in childcare fees alone. Just yeah. Because I'd do a lot of the looking after with my little girl.
Yeah.
So, it's totally fried my brain, and, I've been really, probably quite depressed about it. Not great for a show, but, it's really... It's pissed me off, let's put it that way.
I can completely understand, because, I mean, it's fair enough. If you can do nights and you can get a bit more cash for it, fantastic. But, that's not good. And
no.
Is that your dog I can hear in the background?
No, that's next door's dog, and if it carries on barking, I'm going to ask Tony to come round to set it alight. So I know he does like setting things alight.
I think he does, actually.
Yeah.
Right, so let me tell you a little bit about what I've been up to. I don't want to go on a downer, but, after all the bad things that happened with me and my missus, getting things back together again, I want to say a big thanks to everyone in the community for all the wonderful messages that they posted on the forum. Really nice supportive messages. I've moved into my new house. I now live in Essex.
You've joined the dark side.
I have. I've got the fake tan. My wife's gone blonde. We're trying to fit in a little bit.
Yeah, I'll have to pop round soon, seeing as I'm a little bit closer. See, I'm on the Hertfordshire side, but it's not too far.
No, I think it's only about 20-minute drive, or not even that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not far at all. So.
Right, so let me ask you then, what have you been playing?
Very little, simply because of what's been going on at work. I've been looking for another job, and basically what I've been playing is how to become a black cab driver in London. I'm going to be doing the knowledge.
Fantastic. How many years is that now?
What, to actually learn it?
Yeah.
Ooh, they reckon it can be done in 2 years, but I've got a feeling it's going to take me a lot longer than that, so I'm going to say four. So hopefully in 4 years' time, I'll be a black cab driver.
I'll tell you what you could do to practice this, because I know you mentioned to me earlier on that you're going to get yourself a little moped and ride around, but why don't you get yourself the Getaway on the PS1?
I had a feeling you was going to say that. And do you know how many streets are missing from that
Loads. Absolutely loads,
there's
mate.
Loads. I remember, because I used to work at Chancery Lane.
Yeah.
And the first thing I'd done was I thought, I'll go and see if they've got my work building in there. Yeah. Gone to turn into Chancery Lane. There's a brick wall there. They've just cut the street completely out of the game. Yeah, this I never did take to that game.
I did. I mean, I finished the game. For some reason, I really got into it because it was set in London. Mm. And I saw, once you finish it, you unlock the taxi mode. So you get to drive around passengers all around London. And I loved that. And because I know some of the roads, sometimes I will take shortcuts. But again, like you said, sometimes it would be a big brick, you know. Like, well, not a big brick, a big brick wall, I should say.
Yeah, a big brick wall. Yeah, I had high hopes for it. I think we all remember those screenshots that first started appearing on the net and in the magazines.
But you know what? I think that would be good, actually, in the current modern gen.
They should bring it back. I think now, you know, you've got the power on the consoles to do that kind of game justice. I mean, they had the power back then, really, anyway. We saw how good GT3 was, but GTA 3. But, yeah, when it came to London, I guess they were trying to scan, you know, from photos. And to me, it didn't really work too well as a game. But
yeah, wow, you're going to be a taxi driver.
Yeah.
You sound like a taxi driver.
A lot of people say that. Follow that cab. So, I'm looking forward to it.
You know what? I think I might join you in that as well. As soon as I pick up my driving license, I've got my provisional. Yeah. Once I pick up my proper one, I might sort of do the knowledge as well, because I'm getting a bit fed up doing my job. So anyway, let's quickly tell you what I've been playing. Now, I've finally been connected up to the internet at home.
Yeah.
And I've been playing Mortal Kombat on my Xbox 360. It was like the Mortal Kombat collection. But I decided I'd finish the first game, because I'm still doing my Beat a Game a Week challenge, and I thought I'd finish this game. So what are your views on this game, then?
Didn't mind the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, they didn't seem to do much more with it, and after that I lost interest.
Now, I've got to disagree with you there, because playing this first game, I just thought the graphics don't look that nice, the backgrounds are non-inspiring, the moves are really limited, and it was meant to be gory. It wasn't that fantastic, really. I mean, then I played the second one, and the second one, everything looks a little bit better, everything looks a little bit more memorable, but all in all, you know, it's not a great game, but I'm glad I finished it for my Beat a Game a Week challenge.
Yeah, see, I think my problem was I only played the arcade a few times, and back then I was an Amiga boy.
Probably playing
and
Body Blows.
From what I remember, Body Blows. I didn't like Body Blows. They looked nice, but they were Street Fighter 2 wannabes, and it didn't really play that well. But Mortal Kombat, from what I remember, it was multi-disc, so there was a lot of disc swapping on the Amiga.
Yeah, I think a few people...
You know, for the fatalities, you'd have to insert a disc halfway through. I'm sure it was.
Right, so okay, let me tell you the other game I've been playing. Now, you mentioned this, I think, on the last podcast that we recorded together. You told us that Barbarian was getting a remake on the iPhone.
Oh, yes, on the iPhone. I didn't bother downloading it because the previous looks so ropey. So, was it any good?
No, I'm a sucker, basically, because whenever I sort of see any new retro games coming out on the iPhone, I have to buy them, regardless whether I have got it on my Spectrum or an emulation. Because I just like, you know, just buying retro games, and gosh, it is terrible.
Yes, really bad.
Yeah, the graphics are really bad polygons, they're really badly animated, controls are horrible, it's not even as smoothly animated as the Spectrum, Commodore, or Amstrad versions.
Yeah.
These versions are so much better.
Yeah. See, sometimes I think they create these games and they think, oh, what old game name could we use to help sell this? Maybe that was the case. I don't know. It probably wasn't. But, yeah, it just looks very ropey. And I've just remembered, now you've mentioned the iPhone, I did download... who made NARC? Was it Williams?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a retro pack out on the iPhone. It's got NARC, there's a few other games on there, Tapper.
Right.
Yeah, that's certainly worth taking a look at. The controls, as always, are a bit iffy on the iPhone, but yeah, they're the arcade versions in the palm of your hand, so
fantastic.
Worth checking out.
I think I definitely will do. Okay, so obviously we haven't been up to a lot, we haven't been playing a lot. Let's move on to our next section then, Dean, which is site news. Well, Right, so I've been dying to ask you this, and I'm sure the community have been dying to ask you as well, Dean. What's happened with the D&D remake, and how did you get Jim Bagley involved in it?
Right, yes, because since the last podcast, I don't know if you remember, I actually said that there'll be a technical demo. I think it was due on the 3rd of February, which was my birthday.
What happens?
And it was by this other programmer. Well, yet again, he let me down.
Right.
So I actually sent a message to Jim Bagley, as he uses the World of Spectrum forums.
Right.
Just asking him for some advice, you know, do you think the game is actually possible to convert on the Spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
Because as far as I could see, the guy had let me down again, and I was wondering whether the project was ever going to actually happen. Was it worth continuing with? You know, I've put a lot of time and effort into the graphics. Anyway, explained all this to Jim, and I wasn't even expecting a response, because I don't know the guy, you know, and suddenly I get a message back, and he says, I think it's possible, would you like me to code it for you?
Wow.
And I'm thinking, how can I say no to that? This is Jim Bagley, the guy has had games published since I owned a Spectrum. They were all great games. He's a great coder. You know, I think he's one of the best Spectrum coders there ever was.
Yeah.
And suddenly, I'm having an email conversation with him. I've sent him some graphics. Within a day or two, he's got stuff up and running. And it's just such an amazing feeling. For me, this is one of the biggest opportunities of my life. As strange as that may sound to some people, I respect the guy's work so much. Yeah. You know, Midnight Resistance on the Spectrum, superb. Cabal, yeah. Superb. Roadrunner, not bad. We won't mention that one. But yeah, he's done some great, great games. Hudson Hawk, I don't know if you've ever played that.
It's a
platformer on the Spectrum.
On the Ocean thing.
Yeah, most of his games got released under the Ocean label. He worked for Special Effects Software, who've done a lot of Ocean stuff. You know, the guy is a legend, and I've never spoken to him before in my life, and he's such a friendly bloke. He's done so much in so little time. Unfortunately, at the moment, because he's a freelance programmer, he's got his own company that he works, you know, he basically works at home making games, usually for the iPhone or other systems. Mm-hmm. And in his spare time, he's agreed to do this. And within the first 2 weeks, you know, we've got the sprites running around on screen, the scrolling's done, the music's in there. It's more has happened in 2 weeks than has happened with the other coder. Well, I've had to give the elbow in 2 years, you know, and I felt a bit bad because the other guy got back to me and he said, don't worry, it's going to come, but how long could you wait? And also, when you get someone like Jim offer to do the game, I couldn't turn it down. It was
a
dream come true.
I think we all think you made the right decision because, you know, with Jim, you're fair enough, he's got loads of other things to do, but the game will happen because he's achieved so much in, you know, a short space of time.
And not only that, you know, there was always a chance. I hadn't seen the other guy's programming, so I know, personally, I think the game looks great graphically. You know, I'm biased. I've done the majority of the graphics on it. But
now, you sent me this little ROM thing to play around with it.
Yeah.
And I've actually experimented with that, and I think it moves smooth. It looks nice. The graphics look amazing. The music is phenomenal as well.
The way I see this game, the final version, I think will be a game that could have easily been released back in, say, 1989, 1990, and it would have been a smash hit. And to say that, to me, that's amazing because obviously I'm a big Spectrum fan, and there's a lot of games still being developed for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to discredit anyone, you know. Programming a game is hard work. I can't program. And for anyone to make any kind of game is amazing.
Yeah.
But this is going to be something we haven't seen on the Spectrum in years. I'm so excited about it. I can't wait to see more. But unfortunately, at the moment, Jimmy is kind of busy. So, you know, there might be quite a long wait, but it will be well worth it.
What about a rough estimate? Do you reckon it'll be done in a year, 2 years? How long, you reckon?
I've got a feeling it might be done by the end of this year. You know,
fantastic. Wow.
I'm sure as soon as he's got the chance, he'll be back on it. I mean, last Saturday I was basically playing the arcade game, hitting people with all the different moves just to work out the
point. Were you? Wow.
System.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've sent him that. You know, he's there's a lot of stuff that's going on behind the scenes where I'd already sent him the graphics, but he needed to know what each move does and whatever. Yeah, so I've had to, it's not coding him, but, you know, move one equals punch, move two equals uppercut,
yeah,
frames so-and-so a walk left and right, so-and-so frames a walk up and down. So, yeah, he's still tinkering about with it, even though he's really busy. So I'm sure it'll probably be this year at some point.
It's a game that's been about, what, 6 or 7 years in the making, but it'll be worth it in the long run.
Yeah, it will be worth it in the long run. And I can honestly say that now because I've seen what he's done already. And what he's done already, although there's no gameplay as such, it's already running a lot better than a lot of Spectrum stuff you would have seen in the past.
Now, before we end this a little bit here, how many characters can be on screen at the same time, Dean?
He's going to have, I think, 6 sprites and... that's just the characters and maybe 3 weapons at one time, and it stays at 25 frames per second.
Fantastic.
That's with the music running as well.
Now, we know that it's you and Jim that are making the game. Who are the other guys involved so we can give them a bit of a shout-out?
Right, we have got Craig Stevenson. He's helping me with the graphics. He designed the Billy Lee sprite and done some of the frames of animation. He's also designed the Abobo sprite. He's handling Marion and Machine Gun Willie.
Yeah.
I've done all the rest of the graphics. I think he's going to do the loading screen, and there might be a few cut scenes as well.
Wow.
And Matthew Westcott has done the music. He's still got to do a couple of tracks, but you heard the music on the version that's been made available.
Yeah.
I think it's some of the best stuff you'll hear from an AY chip.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. Right, so we'll move on to my site news. Now, my site news is there's a ZX Spectrum meetup at the Gypsy Moth Pub in Greenwich, and that's going to be on Saturday the 21st of April. Now, I don't know who's organising this. One of our community members, Darren, he sent me this via Twitter, and he was saying, would I be up for going to this? Now, providing I'm off, I will definitely be there, and if I'm not off, I might pull a sickie for that one day. Because, yeah, I want to go out and socialise with people that play retro gaming. And if it's a lovely day in April and it's in Greenwich in London, why not check out the Gypsy Moth Pub and sort of meet like-minded people? So
I think it's actually the guys over on the World of Spectrum forums that are organising this. So,
is it? Wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen the thread over there. So, if I'm about that day, then, you know, hopefully I'll be there because I quite like Greenwich.
If you're free... Yeah, you know what, I'll take a sickie. And hopefully, you know, a few of the other guys can come along as well. So if some of our listeners are listening to this, feel free to check that out. And that's on the 21st of April.
Yeah, let's hope it's a nice sunny day.
Hello, everybody. This is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Right, so let's move on to our next section, which is the top 10 Atari 2600 games.
What a classic system. This is what I started off on.
That was one of my first consoles as well. Now, I've been really looking forward to this because me and you have gone back and forth about the top 10s. Now, I'm curious to find out what's in your top 10 and how it differs from my top 10. So we'll do it like we did last time.
Yeah.
You mentioned the game. Tell us a little bit about it. I'll talk a little bit about it. Then I'll give you my top 10 as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, go for it, buddy.
Right. My number 10 is Decathlon by Activision.
Right, okay, wow.
But you wasn't expecting that, was you?
Well, tell us why Decathlon's in your top 10 then, and at number 10.
It's one of those games, it's one of my earliest memories of playing on the Atari 2600. It's not exactly the best memory, because I broke a couple of joysticks on it. it's just a fun game. My dad has never been into video games.
Yeah.
And it was the one game he'd try and, you know, play against me, and we'd have a bit of a competition thing going on. So, well, everyone's played Hyper Sports and those sort of games. It's very similar to that, but with Atari 2600 graphics. I think it was designed by David Crane, who He'd done some great games on the system, so yeah, it had to be in there. So it's a nice playable game.
So Decathlon is certainly in my top 10. I'm not going to tell you guys where it is in my top 10, but it's certainly up there. Now, the next thing I was going to say to you, Dean, is Activision and David Crane, I think, might appear quite a lot in this top 10.
I would have thought so, yeah. You know, the guy, again, he's another one of those gaming programming legends. He's done so much good work, especially on the Atari 2600 and C64. Yeah, I don't think you could have a top 10, you know, of Atari 2600 games without mentioning him at least once.
Now, it's a great little system, by the way. And we'll talk a little bit about the system once we've done our top 10s. Now, yeah. So at number 10 for me was a game called Dragon's Fire. And it was, I think it was done by Imagic in 1983. Have you ever played this one then, Dave?
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
Right, so let me quickly set the scene. You're this little character, a little knight or a little prince or king, whatever, and it's like a little side-scrolling. It's one screen. You've got a castle and a moat, and you've got to sort of jump over these flames that are coming towards you. Once you enter the second screen, it kind of looks like a gauntlet in a way, but it's one screen, and your little character's got to run around and collect treasure and loads of other sort of precious items while avoiding this big dragon who shoots, you know, fire at you. It's I think it's only two screens, and they keep on looping, and the more you do it, the harder it gets, but it's an amazing game.
I don't think I've ever heard of it, but that's the thing. The Atari 2600 was such a popular system that there were so many games released on it, you know, unless you are proper hardcore, you probably wouldn't have played them all.
Did you own an Atari 2600?
Yes. Yeah, the 2600 was the one that was probably more popular in the UK and in America. I've got a feeling you owned an Atari 7800.
Actually, I've done a bit of research on this, and the version I owned was an Atari 2600 Junior.
Ah, Junior. Right, because the 7800 was also compatible with the 2600.
See, I thought it was that version, and then I started looking online recently.
They look very similar, though, to each
other. Do they?
Yeah, the Junior and the 7800. I'm pretty sure the 2600 Junior was based on the looks of the 7800.
You know what? I'm going to have to do more research on that.
Mm.
All right, then. So why don't you tell us what your number 9 game was?
My number 9 is a coin-op conversion. It's Joust.
Right, wow, okay. So, who's the original arcade game done by?
I thought it was Williams.
Right, okay.
I might be wrong. I can't be 100% sure. I'm probably wrong on that, but,
So,
yeah.
What do you have to do in this game, if you remind me?
Again, it's set in one screen, and basically you're a guy on the back of a flying bird. It's a bit strange, and, you know, it's a two-player game.
Right.
Mainly. I mean, you can play it against the computer, but it's always more fun on two-player. Oh, and you're just flying at each other, trying to joust each other off the flying birds.
Right.
It's not much to it, but it's quite good. It's very good in two-player. It's another classic game.
So, as arcade conversions go, I mean, how does this compare to the actual arcade game?
Fairly close. You know, it's got that blocky 2600 look to it. But, yeah, it was just as playable, I thought.
Okay, now, it's one of the games I remember seeing back in the olden days. So I think I had, it was like a poster or a magazine that had all the games that were coming out. And it was one of the ones I wanted, but I never got.
Well, it's strange, because I actually got it, I think someone swapped a game with me. And when I first loaded it up, I thought, this is crap. I don't like it. But, over time, you know, I put it on more, got into it, and if one of my mates come around, it's always, because it was a two-player game, it always got put on. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Right, so let me tell you what my number 9 game is. It was a game called Oink.
Oink.
And it was done by Activision, and this came out in 1982. Now, for those listeners, and I'm not sure if you know about it, Dean, it's a game based on the Three Little Pigs. Again, it's one screen, and the animation on the pig itself, the character you control, is pretty big, and you're basically in a house, and it's a big bad wolf at the bottom of the screen, and he's blowing this wind who knocks off these bricks.
Right.
So your little character, it's a little pink pig, you've got to sort of run around, collect bricks from the top of the house, and place them down.
Yeah.
And the wolf blows on you, he literally sort of starts dragging you down, and if he gets you, you're dead. So it really is, it gets really tense, actually, because it really picks up a pace.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever played it, but I've certainly heard of that one. Okay. Because there was also a comic called Oink.
Is
out
there?
In out in the UK. Anyone who's probably about 37, 38 might remember that, yeah. Again, it was based on pigs, but obviously there was no connection to the game. But that just, as soon as you said Oink, it reminded me of the old comic.
Yeah, no, but Oink, if you guys haven't played this before, definitely give it a go. Check it out on YouTube as well.
Right.
So what is your number 8 then, Dean?
Number 8, yet again, it's another arcade conversion. It's Popeye.
Right, fantastic. So tell us what you think of this arcade conversion then.
Yeah, I really liked it. You know, the arcade game's great. Again, obviously, the Atari 2600 version isn't as nice looking, but it's just as playable. It had that lovely music in the background.
Yeah.
From the arcades, it was, yeah, again, very, very playable. You know, you had Brutus. Was it Brutus? Or they changed that guy, Bluto.
Yeah, it was Bluto or Brutus. I don't know why they changed his name.
It depends what version of the cartoon you watched. Anyway, you had him chasing after you, and you had to collect the hearts that olive oil was dropping from the sky. And yeah, a great game. The music was so catchy. Half the time, I probably just put it on to listen to the music. But it was very, very playable.
Okay, this is my top 10 as well. What I'll do, I'll talk about it now, and then we'll skip it when it comes into my number. But my memory of this game is just phenomenal. I just remember it felt and looked like a cartoon. I must have played this when I was about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And it captured what the cartoon was all about, you know.
It really did, and in such a simple way.
Yeah, it was really basic, you know, like Bluto, whatever his name was, chasing after you. And you have to avoid him, and the only way you can beat him is by getting your spinach.
Mm.
And, yeah, how many levels did this game have? Was it about 3 or 4?
Yeah, I think it's 4 levels, if I remember correctly. It's a long time since I've played it, probably nearly 20 years or so. Yeah, it's just one of those, you know, love to play it again. I might actually load that up on emulator once I've done this podcast.
Yeah, recently I've been playing that on MAME, and I tell you what, the 2600 have done an amazing conversion. Absolutely amazing conversion.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, rightfully so, deserves to be in the top 10.
Cool.
Right, so my number 8 is Jungle Hunt.
Ah, do you know, I've forgotten all about that.
Now, I love this game. I prefer this game more than Pitfall. Now, the reason why I like this game so much, it was one of the first games I had on the Atari 2600.
Mm.
And back in the day, when I was a little kid, I used to be really obsessed with Tarzan.
Right.
And this game made me feel like Tarzan. I think it's about 4 different levels. The first level, you see your jungle explorer jumping from vine to vine.
Yeah.
And it's all about timing. It made me feel like Tarzan. The second level, you see the hero sort of swimming around in a river, and you've got loads of crocodiles swimming around, and you can kill the crocodiles by hitting them underneath them.
Yeah.
And I think the third level was you're running up a hill, and they've got these rocks and boulders.
Right.
So, yeah, the fourth level was a bunch of cannibals, but I don't think I ever managed to get past that level. So what's your memory and opinion on this game then, Dean?
I think I remember buying that second-hand, and I didn't get into it as much as I did Pitfall for some strange reason. I remember the first level where you swing on the ropes, and the cannibals rings a bell, but I don't remember a great deal about it. Yeah, I've got to admit, I didn't enjoy it as much as I did Pitfall.
Okay, fair enough. Again, I think it's a superb arcade conversion, because I've been playing the actual arcade game on MAME.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, you know, really, really well done. So why don't you tell us what your number 7th game is?
Number 7th game is another Activision release, I believe. It was River Raid.
Right, now this is a game I've heard but never played.
You've never played it?
Now tell us, what is River Raid all about?
It's a bit like Flying Shark, but very much more scaled back and basic. Basically, there's a fuel meter that's running out, and you've got to... trying to think now how you'd actually play it. I used to play this game so much and I can't remember where it plays.
Who was this programmed by, Dean? I'm not sure if it's this game, but there was a game that came out that no matter how many times you played it, it varied. It was different every time.
It might have been River Raid done that. I've actually got it on the iPhone as well.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, it's River Raid HD. It might not be an official conversion, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's still available. But yeah, basically, you're flying up this river, and you know, you've got to dodge bullets, shoot boats, and you go under bridges.
Yeah.
And your fuel gets replenished. I can't remember what it is you do. So crap at remembering some of these things. But what I do remember is it's a very playable game, and one I used to play an awful lot. It's strange I've forgotten so much about it.
I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to fire up an Atari 2600 emulator once we've done this podcast and play.
Yeah, it's certainly worth it. That's, you know, that's one of the games that every 2600 owner should try, definitely.
All right then, so let me tell you what my number seven is. My number seven is a game called Keystone Caper, which was done by Activision again.
Yeah, it's in my top ten somewhere.
Right, so, okay, let me talk briefly about it, and then I don't know if you want to talk about it now or tell me a little bit about it later, but I love this little game, Dean. You play this little policeman, and it's got about four different levels on the same screen, and you've got to sort of try and chase this bad guy, and he's running away from you, and you've got to go up these escalators, jumping over these items, like little mini aeroplanes. And the criminal's really smart, actually, because you can be running down one escalator, and he sees you going up it, and then you run the other way. And the animation on this is superb. I've played this recently, actually, and it looks amazing still to this day.
Yeah, it's a very nice-looking game. Some lovely use of colour in it.
Mm.
I absolutely adore this game. Obviously, it's a bit higher in my top 10. You'll find out exactly where it is soon. But, yeah, a great, great game. I spent hours on this. It's fast-paced. It's quirky. It's a fun game. I don't know what else to say about it, really. It's just one of those... There is another game that's quite similar to it in a way, but to me, it doesn't play anywhere near as well, and that's Bonanza Brothers, the arcade game, and it appeared on the Mega Drive and a few different systems.
That's not quite as good as Keystone
Caper. No, it's not. Actually. It's not as fast, and, well, it certainly wasn't on the versions I've played. It just wasn't as fun.
I think it was beautiful. I think we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to your where it's on your list a little bit, I think.
Yeah, sure. I'm just going to say, Bonanza Brothers, really, that was the same game, but kind of reverse roles, used the thieves getting around. So, yeah. But, yeah, Keystone Capers, great game.
Right, so let's move on to your number six game, then.
My number six, right. It's probably better, well, it's definitely better on another system, but it's, again, a David Crane game. It's Ghostbusters.
Oh, fantastic, mate. You know what? I've forgotten to put that on my list. This is one of my favourite games ever. All right, tell us why you like this game so much.
Well, it's Ghostbusters, for starters. It's the same game, really, as the Commodore 64 version. It's a bit more simplified because it's on a console. You know, I don't think you get to name, you know, put your name in.
Yeah.
The music can get a bit aggravating after you've heard it loop 30 odd times.
Oh, I can't remember the music.
Well, it is the Ghostbusters theme. It's an all-time classic. You go around busting ghosts, driving about, sucking the ghosts through the vacuums and what have you.
Yeah.
It's the same classic game, but on the Atari 2600. I played that version. No, I actually played the Spectrum version first, and I prefer the Atari 2600 version.
You know what? I do as well. The first time I played it was on the Atari 2600. Mm. And again, it's very true to the C64 version.
Yeah.
Some of the things they managed to achieve on this Atari 2600 game, I'm really impressed, because when you've got to drop the bait, because you've only got like one button on the joystick, what you had to do on my Atari machine I had, you had to press the little button on the back of the Atari. It was like a little button, and that would drop the ghost bait, and that way your marshmallow man would your little city.
You know, I'd totally forgotten about that. Yeah, you're right.
The other thing I was going to say, the other thing I liked about it was the Marshmallow Man at the end. It was a huge sprite, if I remember right.
That's right, yeah.
And that was something that was missing from the ZX Spectrum version, because I got the ZX Spectrum version a few years later, and it wasn't in colour. There was colour clash. The Marshmallow Man was just a teeny tiny little sprite.
Yeah. Have you ever done an 8-bit wars on Ghostbusters?
No, I intend to.
Because I was going to say, there's two Amstrad versions.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Mm, yeah. They're very, very similar to each other, but there are differences. But yeah, the Atari 2600 version is definitely up there. It's one of the best versions, I feel.
Okay. Right, so my number six, you've mentioned this game before already. It's Popeye, which was done by the Parker Brothers.
That's right.
Superb little game. So what we'll do then, we'll move on to your number five.
Right, number five, another Activision release. You can tell I love their games.
Yep.
It's Hero.
Ooh, again, a game that I've only played once at a friend's house. Remind me what Hero is all about.
It's a very tricky game. Basically, you're a guy who flies about in dark caverns, and a lot of the time there's spiders that are hanging about, or bats which can shoot with a laser. I think you fire a laser from his eyes, and you're on like a little helicopter backpack, and you can lay down sticks of dynamite to blow walls up that you need to get past to access other parts of the level and rescue people.
Right, okay.
Great little game.
How many screens is it? Because, you know, is it loads to explore, or is it just one screen?
No. There's loads. It scrolls downwards. You know, you make your way down a level. It's like going into I think those are supposed to be mine shafts.
Right, okay.
And you rescue miners. And, great game. Gets very tricky in places. Takes a bit of skill. Unfortunately, there's no in-game music, which it makes it a little bit boring. But, you know, the sound effects are good. Yeah, great playable game that, again, everyone who's into their 2600 has got to play.
You know what? I think once, again, we've recorded this, and if my wife isn't home by the time we finish recording this, I'm actually going to give that game a go because it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, definitely
play it. My number five game is Moon Patrol.
Oh, yes. This is also in my top 10.
Is it? So your
top
10
as
well?
It's in my top 10.
Right, now this game was made by Atari, and it was an arcade conversion. It came out in 1983. And it's so simple. It's fantastic. You're basically this little buggy on the moon, and you move from left to right, jumping over craters, shooting things, and that is it. But the game is so damn addictive.
Yeah, plus it's got that lovely music in the background. I love some of the old Atari 2600 music.
I can't remember the music.
It's strange, because I played an emulated version of it recently, and the music wasn't there. I don't know if it was... There might have been two versions of the cartridge. I don't know, but if you go onto YouTube, check out the arcade version, because that's definitely got the music, and I'm 100% sure that my Atari version also had the same music.
Okay, so do you want to talk about Moon Patrol now, or do you want to talk about when it reaches your number or whatever it is?
I'll talk about it now because it's coming up soon.
Alright then. So why did you like Moon Patrol so much? Were you a fan of the arcade game?
I didn't play the arcade game until I actually played the 2600 version, but it was just a nice simple game. You know, you got the spaceships flying about at the top that you got to shoot, like I said, you got to jump over the craters. Just a very simple but playable game, and that, you know, I was probably rather young when I first played it, and it wasn't overcomplicated. I just picked it up, played it, and I got hooked. And it does progressively get harder, like most games do, but yeah, just very, very enjoyable.
Now, you've touched upon a really good subject there about how games were really easy to pick up and get into. Now, we'll talk a little bit about that once we finish our top 10.
Yeah.
Right, so what's next on the list? Number 4, I believe.
Yeah, and guess what it is? It's Moon Patrol.
Right, so yeah, we've got similar sort of games so far. Right, so we've talked a little bit about that. Let me tell you what my number 4 is now. It's Spider-Man, which once again is done by Parker Brothers.
Yeah, I never played this and I so wanted it, but I could never find it anywhere.
Oh, I demanded this off my mum and dad when I was a little kid because I've always been a huge Spider-Man fan. Always, and you know, I used to love reading the comics, I used to like the cartoons.
Yeah,
I even liked the crappy TV series which had Nicholas Hammond in it.
I love that.
Oh, it's rubbish now. I mean,
you look at it now, it's so dated.
It's terrible. And two of the films, he swings from the same building because they've reshot the same scene. But anyway, the game is so simple. Again, it's fantastic. Obviously, you play the role of Spider-Man, and you climb up a building, and you can sort of like, you've got to go right to the top to try and detonate a bomb. And it's just, you've got to try and avoid all these people that appear on the windows because they can knock you off. You get to shoot your web, you can swing left and right, hit people, and I think the only one that you can't kill is the Green Goblin, or the Hobgoblin, I think, which is near the top of the building. So damn addictive, mate.
Yeah, it's one of those games. I used to see it advertised in magazines, or yeah, so I think one of my friends at school had it, and he wouldn't lend it to me. And
oh, no.
I bet... in your area at the time, but back then I used to buy Atari 2600 games from a record shop in Hackney, and you know, they couldn't actually order anything you asked for. They just used to get stock in, and you just went with a flow. Whatever came in was what was on offer, basically. And Spider-Man never did come into that record shop.
Ah, it's a shame, mate. It's a shame you've missed that. But again, due to emulation, I'm sure you can give that game a try.
I certainly will.
I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's a nice, fun little game.
Yeah.
Right, so what is your number three, mate?
Number three, yeah, another arcade conversion. The arcade was originally by Namco. It's Dig Dug.
Oh, man, I can't believe I forgot to add that to my list.
It's an arcade classic. The Atari 2600 version isn't bad at all. It probably could have been a bit better, but for me, it had the music, it had the gameplay. I love the game. I'll still go back to it quite often. Yeah, it's a classic.
So how did you feel that it compared to the actual arcade then, like looks-wise?
See, by that time, I'd realised, you know, even though I was quite young, that the Atari 2600, it wasn't really... Sometimes it could put off nice graphics, but they were kind of blocky, you know, limited sprites. But personally, I thought Dig Dug pulled it off pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a few years younger than you, Dean, so a lot of these games that were arcade conversions that I played, I didn't even notice the difference because I was just happy enough to be playing these games.
Yeah.
To me, in my little head, I thought they looked perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I think, although looking at it now, you can see that there is a difference. You know, back then, all this was new, so getting these games at home was amazing anyway, so it certainly done its job.
Okay, mate. Now, I've got another little game for my number three. I don't know if it's in your top list. It's Pressure Cooker by Activision.
No, it's not on there.
No,
it's one of those games I've totally forgotten about. Now you've mentioned it, yeah, great game.
So you have played it then?
I have played it, not too often. I didn't own it, but I think my cousin had it.
Oh, it's a great little game. Basically, you play this little chef, and you have to make these little burgers or like sandwiches or whatever, and you have to add lettuce, tomatoes, and they keep. It's kind of like a reverse tapper, but facing upwards, and you've got to keep on dropping food. And I used to just love doing that. I honestly used to get hungry by playing this game because it's all burgers and things.
And we all love burgers when we're kids.
Oh yeah, and I still love burgers.
I still do.
Alright then, so what is your number two game then, mate?
Right, it's a game we've already mentioned. It is Keystone Capers.
Right, you want to tell us a little bit more of why you like this game so much?
Yeah, to me it's just the vibrant colours, you know, the speed of the gameplay, you're chasing after the robber. It looks like a nice game. It plays nicely. What's there not to like?
Yeah, now again, like I've mentioned it before, Dean, the animation is still superb. I played this recently and it looks amazing. I don't know how on earth they managed to get this looking so good back then.
Yeah, very, very nice looking game and totally original as well.
Definitely. Alright then, so my number two game was a game called Enduro.
Ah, that, again by Activision. I was going to put that in there, but
Activision
not so.
Featured so heavily in this list.
Yeah, you know, their games, they really were on top of their game at that time.
So Enduro basically was a little racing car game similar to Pole Position.
Yeah.
And I loved this game so much. Reason being is because not only was it a driving game, but it changed the background. So one minute it's daytime, the next thing it's foggy, the next minute it's nighttime. And that used to just wow me completely because I was thinking, oh my God, it really feels like I'm driving at nighttime. Oh my God, it really feels like I'm driving in the fog. Looking at it now, all they did was just change the background from grey to black.
Yeah, but you know, back then it was all new. So this, when a game did use little features like that, you thought, oh my God, this is amazing.
Because I'm sure when nighttime, when they were doing the game at nighttime, they had like headlights. But again, the thing was just a different colour.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing little graphical touch, which really drew you into the atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely. Good game.
Right, so tell us about your number one then, mate.
Right, number one. Again, it's by the master that was David Crane, or still is. As far as I'm concerned, he's still it's Pitfall 2.
Right, okay. So I'm surprised. I thought you were going to go for Pitfall. Why Pitfall 2 number one?
I find Pitfall 2 a lot more playable. It's probably, in all time, I guess it's a little bit more accessible. I was going to say easier, but I find it a little bit more accessible. With the first game, you know, I managed to get over the first few crocodiles and then I couldn't get much further. But with Pitfall 2, it felt a lot more open to me. It was easier to get about. I completed it. It had good music. It was a good idea. You know, you're running about searching for the gold. If you get hit, if you get killed, you go back to a checkpoint. Yeah, it's a game that I sat down and played from start to finish, and it took me a long time to actually finish it. I used to get to a certain point nearly every day, and I'd die, and you know, I'd end up getting up, switching the machine off. But I persevered and finally managed to do it, and then after that I could do it every time.
Really? Great. Wow, game. That's pretty impressive. I could never actually get that far.
Yeah.
Now, whenever I played it, I always thought I was Indiana Jones, and I was sort of like searching for treasure out in the wilderness, and that's one of the reasons why I really got into those sort of games. Now, I thought it was a little bit too tough for my liking. That's the reason why I preferred games like Jungle Hunt. Right. But not a bad little game.
Yeah, it's a great game, and you know, I've got to mention, because this back then no one else done this, but Activision, on there, the brochure that came with the game, you'd get a page at the back all about whoever programmed the game. And obviously I had a few games and it kept mentioning this guy, David Crane. And every game I played that he designed or programmed, or you know, done both a lot of the time, they were amazing. And it made me seek out these games or other games by Activision. You know, nowadays Activision is basically, it is a different company. They're just using that name from back then. But back in the early 80s, when they were making Atari 2600 games and Commodore 64 games, they were probably one of the best publishers out there at the time.
You know what I find amazing though, Dean? It's like, I mean, roughly how old were you when this game came out then?
I'm trying to think. I'm guessing it was about 1984, so I would have been about 9 years old.
Well, so I'm thinking, like, you said you seeked out these games. I mean, so what did you do? Did you sort of like
I used to go and look for them because there was a record shop, like I said, that was in Hackney, Mare Street. It's, you know, it's long gone. And this is the sort of place you'd buy video games. They'd done Spectrum games as well, but I remember they used to have a glass cabinet, and I'd look through, and I'm looking for the, you know, Activision games were so, you'd identify them straight away because they had their logo, they used that colour.
Yeah.
You know, all their games, they stood out really well. And yeah, you know, as soon as I saw an Activision game, I'd check it out, and it'd tell you who programmed it. They made their programmers famous. Most of their guys used to work for Atari. Yeah. They moved on from Atari because they wouldn't get recognition. You know, Atari treated their programmers as if they were just a part of the production line.
Didn't a lot of Atari programmers well put their name hidden away within the game?
Yeah, apparently so. And you know, a few of them got together and they come up with this idea of going and starting a publishing company of their own, and Atari tried putting a stop to it because at the time there were no third-party publishers for Atari games. Everything was coming out for the Atari from Atari. So Activision started up, and most of their stuff was amazing. You know, back then it just blew me away. It was so different, just having a brochure and it tells you all about the programmer. You know, it's very strange back then, really.
Yeah, because I think he literally just started all that, because like now you've got like all these other people like Sid Meier's Pirates, or you know, Sid Meier's Civilizations, and what's the other guy, American McGee's Alice.
Yeah.
So I think it was Dave Crane that made it, you know, put this to the forefront that, hey, I'm a programmer, I made this game, and that's pretty impressive actually.
Yeah, it's impressive. Plus, you know, it wasn't just that, his games were superb, and that's what made them stand out at the end of the day.
Well, let me tell you what my number one game is. You've already mentioned it. It's Decathlon.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why it's so high up there, Dean, was because I still love this game.
Yeah, it's
great, I still play it. It's so simple, it's so addictive, and again, it's all about shaking that joystick left and right. It's got so many events.
Yeah,
that's what I like about it.
It has, you're right. You know,
it's got the hurdles, 100 metres, 200 metres, long jump, high jump, pole vault. But Have you ever tried to do the 1500 meters? Now, I tried that recently, and my God, it really felt like I was actually running a decathlon.
Well, I was going to say, I'm asthmatic, and you know, when I was a kid, my asthma used to be a lot worse, and right. It got to the point my mum and dad wouldn't let me play the game because I was nearly having an asthma attack every time I played it.
I'm trying to imagine it's like your mum and dad sort of come in, and there's like Dean passed out on the floor.
Another broken joystick.
Oh gosh, no, but it's a great game, and it was just trying to beat, like you said, you played it with your dad, I think. Now, yeah. I used to play this game with my dad, and it was trying to beat his records in sort of things like the shot put or the javelin or the high jump, and it was amazing because if you did shape really fast, you know, it worked. Your character did run faster. It did move, you know, and it's just, I love this game.
See, I found it so hard with the old Atari joysticks, but they didn't have suction pads on them, did they? You couldn't place it down and, you know, do it on the table or anything. You had to hold it, and, oh, that's a little kid. I was kidding.
You have to hold it in between your teeth and shake the joystick that way. The other technique was I'd put it in between my feet and sort of, like, wiggle the joystick that way.
Oh, killer. An absolute killer for me.
But yeah, okay, so that's our top 10 Atari 2600 games. So guys, I would love your feedback on this. You know, let us know whether you agree or disagree, or whether there's a few other games that, you know, we've missed out on that, you know, you'd like us to give a mention. So yeah, give us your feedback on that.
This is Matt Benares. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into Retro Asylum Podcast.
Now, Dean, you covered some nice, interesting topics on the Atari 2600. You said the graphics were very basic. You know, obviously it was early 80s, but the program has captured so much playability to make you feel that you were in this world.
Yeah, and, you know, you've got to look at some of the space they had. I think a lot of these games were like 3 or 4K. It was a silly amount of space that I don't know how they've done it. It's just mind-boggling. But, yeah, they pulled off some great games. Obviously, now you look at them, and, that, you know, a lot of the games are very basic. You know, a lot of the younger guys, I guess, who see, you know, the Mega Drive stuff as their first retro experience, you know, it depends on when you're born. It is a great system. There's some great games on it.
Let's quickly talk about two of the worst games then. E.T., what did you think of that?
I don't think I ever played it. I've got to be honest. You know, I think by the time I saw it on sale, and I'd already seen, there was magazines about back then, obviously not like today's stuff, but basically I got the vibe, it said avoid, you know, so I didn't go near it.
No, apparently, you know, this was so bad that many people put this behind, you know, the main reason why the video game crashed, and they apparently buried loads of them in Mexico.
Yeah, you know, the video game crash, obviously it didn't affect the UK halfway near as bad as it did in the States. So, you know, E.T. was a massive, massive film. I remember it being released. There was queues and queues to see this film. And, you know, I guess everyone had high expectations for the game. And when you find out it's a complete duff game, and I think people were going off the idea of games at home anyway, because there were so many games being released that were crap, or they were the same thing over and over again. You know, the American public just, they thought this, it's a fad, that they had had enough by that time.
So what was your view in Pac-Man, the original version of the 2600 then?
I had it, I played it. It wasn't the same as the arcade, you know, it looks totally different. Even the shape of the screen isn't the same. But I don't mind it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if I was to try and play it today, I'd think, yeah, this is, yeah, it's nowhere near as good as the arcade. But at the time, I was a lot younger. It was an ugly game. Even back then, you know, it was ugly.
Yeah.
I found it okay. I don't think it was as bad as what people made it out to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think it was as bad as people made it out to be. And as a little kid, I was just happy to actually play it. Okay, you know, there's been more modern recent Atari 2600 games, like Double Dragon, which I think came out not that long ago, it came out in the late 80s, I think
it came out, probably about 88, 89, by which time, you know, I was well into my Spectrum by then. I still had the Atari 2600, but I wasn't really buying many games for it. I never did play it. Did we play at the Replay Expo?
I can't remember whether we did or not, but I mean, the game looks very, very basic. It's got a few. It's got the tune.
It's got the tune. Yeah, you know, they were trying so hard at that point to, you know, obviously Double Dragon's a massive game.
Yeah.
All the computers at the time that it was released on, they had trouble fitting that game into it. So trying to cram it into an Atari 2600, it was asking the impossible, but in a way, they kind of pulled it off, I think.
I think so. I think it's good for the Atari 2600, but hey, it just didn't have the power to do it, but it's a good conversion, I think.
Yeah, you know, there's certain elements of the game there, and just cram that in itself is amazing, I think.
Right, so one more thing about the Atari 2600. I want to talk about Halo, which has been released on the Atari 2600.
Yeah, I've seen screenshots, but that's all about I know about it.
Apparently, it's not a bad little game. You know, again, you've got to use your imagination to find out who these characters are, and it plays pretty good from what I've seen. And I think that even gets distributed as well on a cartridge as well.
Really?
Right, so let's start rounding things up then. Yeah, we've been doing really, really well, actually, Swainy. We've been getting noticed a lot more on other forums. Like, you pointed one out to me as well.
Yeah, you know, we're getting some nice reviews. It's not just on iTunes, by the way. This is a few other gaming forums. People have mentioned us. So it's nice to know that you're appreciating the show. Please do keep spreading the word, guys, because, you know, the more reviews we get and the more feedback and the more listeners, it just makes this so much more worthwhile.
No, I completely, totally agree with you, mate. You know, now, I've got a way of saying thanks to everyone. Now, I'm really happy the way the community have actually been keeping the forum alive, been keeping the site alive, because they've been uploading videos as well.
Yeah.
And recently, I bought myself a Blaze Mega Drive handheld.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, it comes with 18 games built in. And it's the Streets of Rage Blaze handheld. And you've got 18 games to play around with. Now, what I am going to do, I'm going to give this away in a prize.
Oh, cool.
Now, I've been umming and erring how the prize is going to go along. I've decided the best way to do it is I want some retro gaming jokes.
Right.
So I'm going to post something on the forum that says retro gaming jokes, and I want to hear your retro gaming jokes, and the winner will get decided on episode 13. So it won't be the next episode, obviously. It'll be the episode afterwards. So yeah, to win the Blaze handheld with 18 games, you know, tell us your jokes, retro gaming jokes, and then you can win it, and I'll post it to you. And that's my way of saying thanks, guys, for all your hard work.
Not a bad little prize.
iTunes reviews, Swainy, we are on fire. We are officially the UK's number one retro gaming podcast.
Isn't that
we really
nice?
Are. It is. It's absolutely fantastic. Now, let me tell you, let me read out some of the reviews.
Yeah.
Right, so last time we did a podcast, we were on 16. So, number 17 is by VYS. ADH, I can't pronounce that, and he put, only listened to the first episode so far, but you guys have a great thing going on here. Really looking forward to future episodes. Love the music sections. Really hoping there's more of that. And that was a 5-star review. We've got another 5-star review by Tabstock, and he put, fantastic, really great podcast. Just found this today, link from their website, and I've listened to 4 episodes already. If you're a fan of retro gaming, then it's a must. It's informative, funny, and delivers a nostalgic hit like no other podcast out there. Absolutely love it. Subscribes. And we've got another 5-star review, which is by Stephen Pomeroy, and he says, retro in the UK. With all the retro podcasts that are available, it's nice to find one that's equal across all mediums of retro gaming, whether it be consoles, computers, arcades, and looks into game music, obscure systems, and current homebrew projects, and other areas that will appeal to a wide range of retro fans.
Very nice.
And they keep on coming, mate. We've got another one by Freddy the Kettle. Color Clash-tastic. This podcast has taken me right back to the days of shoplifting Atari 2600 games from my local record shop. And our monthly gaming nights at the good old Lithium Sports and Social Club during the ZX Spectrum's heyday, right through to the self-inflicted Sid's arcade hole, and insane Wayne trying to flog me non-working Dreamcast copies. Great times indeed. Nice one, fellas. Okay, so now I've read quite a few of them, but we've got 2 more, Dean. So you know what? Let you do the honours. Why don't you read them out?
Okay, right. Easy retro listening. Superb. This is by, and it's that game, Ikigumu. headset.
Ikaruga
Moo. Right, one of the best podcasts out there for retro gaming. No messing about, getting too deep, too cynical, just gamers with reasoned opinion. Enjoyable listening and so much to talk about, still even 10 episodes in. Looking forward to more.
You sound like you're crying, Dean. He's crying with joy because of all these wonderful iTunes reviews.
It's because I've just run up and down the stairs on my phone, that's why. I'm out of breath.
Oh. Right, so who's the last one by then?
Right. Oral Pong. Who are these people? No, it's by Turbo Nips. Right, he says, it's another 5-star review, by the way. I think all of these are.
Yeah.
A big bag of retro awesomeness. Thanks, guys. These are superb. And whoever Freddy the Kettle is, that did make me laugh.
Yeah, so guys, again, I've got to say, I really appreciate these iTunes reviews. It really motivates me, it motivates everyone. And it's a nice way of saying thanks. So it only takes a minute, guys. And if you guys aren't too keen on using iTunes, well, why not get your missus or your brother or someone else that's got an iTunes account and just get them to give us an iTunes account
review.
Review, that's what I meant. Right, so yeah, let's move on to the next bit. So who have you got to thank then, Dean?
Well, I want to thank everyone who has sent a review onto iTunes or has been spreading the word on all the different forums out there, guys. I really do appreciate it. I know you do, Andy, and, you know, please keep doing, like I said, please keep spreading the word.
Right, so yeah, I'd like to say a few thanks. I'd like to thank the guys from Retro Resistance, Malk and Tony, aka the Things Like That podcast. I'd like to thank Mr. Gamer, also known as Asperger's Gamer. I'd like to thank Porty Boy and Scoopy, because these guys have all been contributing videos to the site, which are all fantastic.
Yeah, they are really good, guys. I have been watching them. I'm sorry I've not been leaving many comments recently. I've just been very busy. I managed to watch a video while I'm getting ready for work some mornings, and then I have to shoot off.
Right, so, yeah. Oh, one thing that I keep on forgetting. Guys, if you're listening to this on iTunes, why not pop down to retroasylum.com. Join the forums, mingle in with the other community members. We're all nice, we're all like-minded people. And yeah, I think that's about me. Anything else then, Dean?
There's one person I've got to thank, obviously, for doing such a brilliant job on Double Dragon, and that is Jim Bagley. So Jim, if you're listening, thanks, mate. I can't wait to play the finished version.
Right, so yep, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me too.
Right, okay, that should be fun. I wonder how long we've recorded for.
I don't know, it's nearly 10 to 5, so quite a while. You're going to have a bit of editing there, mate.
Oh, some of the outtakes I'm going to stick on this. Like, I was doing a little commentary when you were running down the stairs and the button hit, and there's Dean running down the stairs. This is what you should be listening to when you're going around.
Yeah. Street Hulk. Yeah. Right, I'm nearly done on this, am I?
Right. The only thing is that my wife might arrive just before 4:30, so we got to do it an hour pretty much.
Okay.
And she'll probably be like, oh, why aren't you doing any housework?
Setting you up.
Exactly. You want me to send you a list of games?
I've got a list of games, I just need two more, but I'm a fussy git.
Right, you got your top 10?
I believe so.
You believe so, okay, so... The next thing I want to say is, how many games will be...
Oh, sorry, Andy, you've cut out there completely.
Right, okay, sorry, so... Man. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
What was the last thing you heard me say?
No, it's gone again.
Oh, crap.
Right. I can hear you again there, mate.
Right, so what was the last bit you heard me say originally?
You said that it's somewhere in your top 10 collection, but I don't know where.
Right, okay, so yeah. Catherine's certainly in my top 10. You can't hear me.
No.
I'll tell you what. Again. Let me hang up and I'll do that bit again.
Okay, mate. Hello, mate.
Right, so yeah, that sounds a bit more clearer. I don't know what.
Yeah. Strange.
Bizarre. Okay, let's go back to it. So 3, 2, 1. Fourth level, what was it? I think you've got to fight against the cannibal by jumping over his head or something, which I can't get to anymore.
You've gone again, mate. Oh.
No, really?
Yeah,
oh, fun. Crap. Crap, 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 crap.
It's just ain't happening, is it?
So, what number are we at now? I completely forgot.
That was number 6. Okay, this is by... How do you pronounce that?